Ask a patient what kind of care they want, and the answer isn't as simple as it used to be. Some still want to be told exactly what to take and when. Others show up having already read the studies, tried the supplements, and built a theory about what's really going on in their body, and they want a provider who'll meet them there. Somewhere in between sit the patients who've spent years bouncing from specialist to specialist, chasing a diagnosis that never quite lands until alternative starts to sound less like a fringe choice and more like the only option left. Holistic, integrative, functional, precision, personalized, the terms get used almost interchangeably in headlines and wellness content, sometimes even in clinic, but they don't mean the same thing, and the differences aren't just semantic. They shape what a treatment plan looks like, what evidence backs it, and how much of a patient's actual life a clinician is willing to take into account. Today, we're joined again by Sonia Thomas, PharmD, BCOP, AFMCP, INHC, professor, oncology pharmacist, and integrative nutrition health coach to pull these terms apart. We'll talk about why patients drift toward alternative medicine and what functional medicine actually looks like in an hour-long visit and where pharmacogenomics has quietly changed real dosing decisions. We'll get into how differently baby boomers, millennials, and Gen Z approach their own care and where Sonia thinks this is all heading over the next decade. And we come back, as always, to what it means for the person behind the counter, how pharmacists counsel patients through this noise, and why understanding these distinctions may matter more now than ever. I'm Alex Gerlach, and this is Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. Thanks for coming back on. It's fantastic to have you again. I'm excited to jump into discussions about complementary medicine versus alternative medicine. Similar to our last discussion, there's a lot of misinformation that's kind of circulating online. The difference between all of these different types of therapies can be a bit difficult to discern. So why don't we just open first, because you've been here before, but some of our audience members might not be as familiar with you, with introducing yourself.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. So my name is Sonia Thomas, and I am a full professor, and I've been teaching within academia for almost 15 years. And my practice site as an oncology pharmacist is at an outpatient center associated with a hospital. So we do both outpatient, a little bit of inpatient, and then I am also an integrative nutrition health coach. So I've done a couple of different things in terms of like integrative practices, coaching patients holistically, kind of like a health approach. And then I utilize it also with my cancer survivors at my site when we counsel these patients. So that's sort of my background.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that introduction. So you submitted a paper to the publication, actually, kind of helping to discern all of these different definitions between complementary, alternative, precision, et cetera. So I'm curious, let's just start from overarching 30,000 foot view. When people hear terms like holistic, integrative, functional, or precision medicine, and especially when they're used interchangeably, what gets lost in that conflation?
Yes, no, I think that's a great point. I think there are a lot of terms that I feel like some of them, they do all have their own meaning, their own space, but I feel like each one kind of has a different route. Like, for example, holistic is really more of a method of approaching like whole person health, which means you're incorporating like the body, the mind, and the soul. You're taking techniques to help with, like, so let's say somebody, you're not able to sleep at night and you go to the doctor. Somebody who's holistic would take an approach for not just prescribing sleep medication or supplements to help you sleep, but they would also take more of an emphasis on kind of figuring out what are things going on in your life, what are stressors, and like holistically approaching it in terms of now giving you techniques for not just sleep hygiene, but really how to incorporate it into your daily life. How are we going to do these sleep techniques? Let's go through, let's keep a journal, a diary, let's do a sleep reset. So there's a lot more of this focus on, I want to know everything about you to figure out why you have this sleep problem, rather than, okay, you have a sleep problem, here's what can fix it. Let's kind of move on. And I think all types of medicine will focus like on sleep hygiene and stuff like that. But the time spent and connecting the dots, I think, is what makes it a holistic approach. And then similarly with integrative. So integrative, I love integrative because all it means is it's taking different types of medicine and utilizing all of them to approach the patient. And so I think that that is great because it takes Western medicine, it takes functional medicine, it takes precision medicine, and it utilizes everything. And then functional medicine is totally different. So functional medicine is, it's got kind of like a root cause approach. So I think it's looking at anytime there's any disease state, like what is it that is causing it? Functional medicine believes everything is connected. So if you've got a thyroid disorder, like if you've got Hashimoto's, an autoimmune disorder, it believes that everything is connected and they want to get to the root cause of the issue. When somebody has an autoimmune disorder, it believes that this is sort of the end of the inflammation cascade, almost towards the end. And so there's a root cause. It's impacting hormones, it's impacting blood glucose, everything. And so that is more of functional medicine. They utilize different types of labs, different types of tests to kind of figure out what the best approach is. And then treatment plans for functional medicine are cumbersome. They are very long. They involve a lot of things, herbs, supplements, lifestyle modifications, even Western medication. So functional medicine is getting to the root cause, but it's almost a completely different type of medicine. So I think all of this gets lumped together. And I think like sometimes what people are looking for is really more of that holistic integrative approach. And they may not understand what these different clinics and titles really mean.
Thank you for that. So, I mean, that kind of leads us into this, so this idea that all of these get lumped together, right? So complementary, alternative medicine. But in your article, even specifically, you draw like a hard line that one is used alongside conventional care and the other instead of it. So why does that distinction matter clinically? And where do you think patients most often blur it?
Yes, that's a great question. So yeah, exactly what you said. Complementary medicine is used alongside with any like allopathic Western medicine. So it just means that it's similar to integrative, where you can utilize, maybe you are utilizing some sort of herbs and supplements. You're utilizing portions of like traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, and then you're incorporating that into Western medicine. Whereas alternative means you are only taking the route of a different type of medicine approach, which commonly like Ayurvedic medicine, which is Ayurvedic and traditional Chinese medicine are the two oldest types of medicines. One comes from India and the other one from China. And they are utilizing strictly herbs, plants, supplements, holistic like approaches. And so they would not like necessarily utilize a lot of Western medication. So that would be an alternative medicine. So if you decide I'm going to do alternative medicine, then you would not be doing anything that involves Western medicine. That's what alternative would mean. Whereas complementary would be in addition to. So this happens a lot with oncology, right? So there's people who decide they want to do the alternative route where they may say, I just want to get vitamin C along with this and along with that. And that's their treatment. Whereas there's somebody else that may decide, I want to get traditional chemotherapy at a lower dose in addition to vitamin C or other types of medicine. So that would kind of be the difference between complementary and alternative.
And where do you think that patients find alternative medicine, specifically alternative medicine, to be so attractive? I think that this also, I guess, in the age of misinformation and this growing lack of trust in science, I think is really what bolsters it. But where do you think that what point do you think patients find themselves wanting to go the alternative route and avoid some of these conventional Western therapies?
That's a great question. So from what I've seen, what I've found is there's two things that happen that really draw people to say, I just want to go the alternative medicine route. I think the first thing is when they are bounced around from doctor to doctor and specialty to specialty because nobody can really figure out the root cause and they are just treating their specialty area and they're not looking at the whole patient as a whole. So what ends up happening is the patient ends up getting fatigue from being bounced around, going to so many appointments, so many tests, and ultimately not finding the answer. And they don't know what to do because they feel crappy, but they don't know what the reason is. And so I think that when they hit that line, and this is typically, I've seen it after like 3 to 5 years of being bounced around. That is, I feel like, the spot where most people will end up turning to alternative medicine, because at that point, they feel like they've done everything they can in the Western medicine route. And that's when I've seen people look and turn to alternative medicine. The second time, I think another time when I think a lot of people turn to alternative medicine is more for like daily living, for little issues. Like, for example, you have a cold and a lot of people will say, well, I don't want to take a lot of the cold medications because, and I don't even know if a lot of people know this, cold medication doesn't really treat the cold. It only treats the symptoms. So it's not like, it's only for your relief that when you're taking cold medication, it's for your relief based on how bad your symptoms are, but it's not actually like treating the cold virus that's there because you don't do anything to treat the virus. And so I think that that's where it can play a role because they're just looking for symptom relief for like daily things, or if they've got a headache, if their child has ear pain. I think that's another time when people look at alternative medicine, because I think it's sometimes it's easier to have some of these home remedies or homeopathic remedies around. I also think a lot of times people will turn to alternative medicine when it comes to pain. If they're in severe pain for anything and all they've been told is painkillers, steroids, epidurals, like, and they're just continuously going for these shots and relying on them, I've seen people get really into alternative routes. And it could just be as simple as they're just looking for more focus on physical therapy or maybe massage or acupuncture, whatever it is. So I feel like these are the times when people kind of like have it up to here and they start turning to alternative medicine.
Yeah. And I think that this really segues us into the discussion of functional medicine. We have patients who are jumping around between different doctors trying to address some sort of symptom. So like you said, functional medicine is really looking at things from like the root cause, like why is this happening? Not just it's happening and this is how we treat it. So it's often described as this could include gut health, inflammation, hormonal imbalances. How does that actually change a treatment plan compared to a conventional workup for a similar complaint? So sleep, headaches, fatigue, etc.
Yeah, great question. So a functional medicine visit is about like 1 hour to 2 hours long. And then the traditional like Western visit is typically like 10 to 15 minutes. And so that kind of gives you an idea. And a lot of that is a system failure. I think it's just, it's the way the system is set up. It's the way insurance reimburses. It's the way that businesses run, practices run. For functional medicine, they actually start with a full health history, and that's what takes so long. They want to know everything. They want to know, were you breastfed? Were you not? Were you formula fed? Did you get vaccinations as a child? Did you not? Where were you born? And all of this plays a role because they use a lot of different types of alternative medicines to kind of come up with a picture of the patient, because a lot of it will impact different things. Like, for example, they'll also look at blood type because that will impact like certain foods that will work well for you, things that you'll crave, where you were born sometimes, like will correlate with, do you do well with, do you need hot foods? Do you need raw foods? Do you need kind of balancing like that pH in your, they're looking for gut health, anything that's impacted gut health. That's what they're kind of looking for, this full story. So that visit takes a long time. It's a lot of paperwork, but it's also a lot of like talking to the provider. A lot of it is also focusing on emotion. More specifically, what are all the traumas you've gone through? What are things that you have not dealt with that you've sort of kept bottled up inside? in functional medicine, they truly believe like every emotion is attached to a certain disease state. And so tackling that head on, being aware of it and being able to do a type of alternative medicine to like kind of address the emotion is something else that they also take into account. So it's a very different type of approach. When it comes to treatment, it's also extremely different. Their treatment protocols consist of like supplements, teas, herbs, Western medicine, different gut tests. And so it's a very different type of medicine. I think the area, it's tough because a lot of this stuff has evidence and some doesn't. And it's not recognized by a lot of the Western-based protocols, guidelines, because there's just not enough randomized controlled trials and data to support it. And I think that's where the line becomes a little blurry. That's where I think sometimes like patients may not understand like when is the best time to go, when is not the best time to go.
So that kind of moves us into precision and personalized medicine, which is kind of synonymous, but really taking the lead in cancer care nowadays. So precision is framed as grouping patients by shared biological traits, while personalized kind of goes down specifically to an individual and their individual biology. Does that distinction hold up in your day-to-day practice, or do you think that's something that they more so see in like academic settings?
Yes, a great question. So yes, I know. So with precision medicine, especially when it comes to oncology, a lot of that we're utilizing this daily. We're looking at what target does the cancer have, what's changing, and we're looking to see what is the best targeted treatment, what can we recommend. So that's more so precision medicine. Personalized medicine is all encompassing. It does encompass precision medicine, but it also looks at other things like epigenetics, nutrigenomics. These are all things that, what is your DNA made of? Are you more prone to sugar cravings? Are you able to metabolize fats better, carbs better? So personalized is a bigger, I think, more of a, I guess, holistic approach. And for us, yes, I say daily precision medicine. Personalized medicine is utilized on occasion, depending on the patient when we're counseling them based on their nutritional needs.
So, and I guess that kind of moves us into holistic medicine. So there's really no standardized license. Pretty much everyone from a doctor to a massage therapist can consider themselves practitioners of holistic medicine. So how do you think a pharmacist should judge quality or safety in that space when there's such little standardization? And how do you, even further that, counsel your patients on that? I think that's really the crux of it all, right? They're the ones that we're treating at the end of the line.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, and we get lots of patients that ask about a lot of this stuff. My approach, like my favorite term really is integrative. It's because integrative is probably, it's better to look for a practice that has holistic and integrative in it, because integrative will encompass everything. It tells me that these practitioners are still utilizing evidence-based medicine, but in addition to that, they are looking at the patient as a whole, and they are utilizing maybe like a PT, and maybe they are utilizing a health coach or somebody like to help with CBT for sleep. They're utilizing different areas and different specialties to give the patient the best health care. So my advice is to focus on practices that have the term integrative, also taking a look at practices that, when you look at like looking at the physicians there, is it run by, is there a physician present, or is it just run by alternative providers? And if it's just run by alternative providers, who is the physician? Who, where is it under? Where is that physician? Who is it? What is their training? What is it that they're promoting? I think that's really crucial to figure out who's actually helping you, who are you seeing? And then again, looking for sort of more of that holistic, integrative, personalized, those are the terms that I think are going to point you towards that type of practice that would really give you kind of more of that evidence-based care.
So, and I Continuing that, we're talking about patient counseling and talking about integrative medicine. A part of that discussion, other than just defining and informing, might also come with real evidence. So what kind of real evidence basis is there for integrative medicine? And where do you think advancements still need to be made? Where do we need to catch up a bit?
Yeah, I think it's really hard because we all know being healthy, we all know eating healthy, doing certain types of exercise, we all know a lot of this stuff is true. And we've seen it, we have evidence on a lot of this stuff. But for a lot of it, it's not, when it comes to science, you can't just apply it just because one thing for one thing, you can't apply it for every single disease state. So now the problem becomes, are there studies done? Is there data out there for every single disease state? And there's not for all of these alternative techniques, because it takes a lot. You need a lot of big trials. Sometimes you don't have funding for these trials because they're not utilizing drugs. So funding is a huge limitation. There are not pharmaceutical companies really putting money into looking at how yoga can help cancer survivors, right? So funding becomes very limited. Thankfully, there is actually a society out there called the Society of Integrative Oncology, SIO, and they have really made big strides, and they have come out with a set of guidelines. They have kind of partnered with ASCO, and they've written guidelines on specific techniques, like so insomnia related to breast cancer, for example, fatigue related to like cancer survivors. There's specific guidelines out for a lot of these techniques. So I think that's great that there is actual evidence behind there to come up with guidelines. And that was just recent in 2024. And then there's also something called the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, ACLM. They are also completely evidence-based. They utilize research studies and guidelines. They partnered with like the Blue Zones, if you've heard of that. And they have come out with guidelines for like diabetes, for overweight, managing a lot of different things with these lifestyle approaches. So I think any of these that focus on lifestyle modifications, these are good organizations and places to go where it is evidence-based and you can find data to kind of back it all up. So those are my top two.
Awesome. Well, that's fascinating. I'll have to bring you back on so we can maybe talk about those guidelines a bit more specifically, because I think that would be really beneficial to go over, like you said, insomnia for breast cancer patients and some other similar adverse effects that symptoms that patients are often experiencing. So kind of getting into a bit more Western conventional therapies in cancer care. So pharmacogenomics sits really at the center of this personalized and precision medicine space. What's a moment where genomic data, you think, actually changed a drug or dosing decision that you made?
Yeah, that's a great question. So pharmacogenomic testing is where it will tell you kind of how well you metabolize certain types of medications. And are you somebody that we say is a slow metabolizer or rapid metabolizer, which means this drug leaves your body very quickly, or this drug stays in your body for a long period of time, which means you're prone to side effects. And so I think one of the biggest spaces where this has really made a big difference is probably with like different types of, I would say like maybe with some psych medications, but a lot more with cardiac medications. So like, for example, aspirin and Plavix. So specifically Plavix, lots of patients are placed on it after getting a stent or like cardiac bypass. And there are some people who are CYP2C19 is kind of the enzyme associated with it, that might be ultra rapid metabolizers, or they might be slow metabolizers. And now they're at a risk of having another event, and they are taking their medications like they're supposed to, but they are not getting the full therapeutic effect. Now that's an example of like a much older medication where the company has put that on there where it says this requires testing, all of that is on there. So that's like kind of like an older example. I would say another kind of unique example that really sticks out to me is utilizing some pharmacogenomic testing where like they find out they have, or they don't have like that five, like the methylfolate gene. So in that sense, they would end up with like what seems to be like high amounts of vitamin B12, like not not being able to process it properly. And so what that means for pharmacists once you, is that you're going to recommend to that person to make sure that they've got the methylated form of a multivitamin. So I think that that is huge because vitamin B12, folic acid, all of these things are important. And then they're just continuing to take these multivitamins and not getting the benefit from it. And they're crucial vitamins. So that is another really good example. And then there's a couple other like standard examples where we've seen it applied with chemotherapy, like irinotecan or Zofran for utilized for nausea and vomiting, where we find and wonder why is it not effective? And then we find through here with their CYP6 status. And so I think that has been very beneficial for patients when it comes to like nausea and vomiting control.
So thank you for that. So kind of continuing on this precision medicine route, this move away from a one-size-fit-all approach in cancer care and something that's more preventative, ideally, if you can get early enough in that sense, and patient-driven. So is that a genuine shift in how care is delivered or mostly a shift in language? Like, do you see that the personalized patient-driven approach is really coming to the forefront or that it's something that's really being talked about, but there's still kind of barriers and really putting that into practice?
Yeah, so I definitely think it's changing. And I do see, yes, of course, there's barriers and there's a lot that needs to be ironed out and figured out. But I can definitely see it actively changing. I strongly believe like 10 years from now, 15, 20 years, even down the road, I think it'll be different. I think it'll be completely different. It'll be more of like a focus on personalized medicine and these platforms. I'm already seeing a million platforms start to pop up to get labs drawn. For example, there's something called Function Health. Now there's quite a few other ones where you can go and get your labs drawn. And it's a lot more comprehensive. It's more frequent than like your standard testing. And then like, I can see that growing more into now here's somebody kind of giving you your personal health plan in terms of exercise, what to eat. Here are like medications, supplements that you should take. I think a lot of that is coming. It's already starting. I see many people, more specifically, I will say the millennials are the ones who are getting very interested in this because they are now in that range. They're in the 30, that sort of range where a lot of these disease states, that's sort of like the median age of diagnosis for a lot of autoimmune conditions, for certain types of cancers. So I definitely have started seeing that shift. I do think that when millennials are maybe like about 10 years from now, I can see that shift being massive into personalized healthcare. I've seen so many different types of apps where it becomes more convenient, quicker for you to see the provider. You have more time with them and they're taking a lot more of that holistic approach. Now, the downfall of that right now is the cost. Most of it is not covered by insurance. It is costly. But I have seen that millennials are more likely to pay for that type of healthcare over like Gen Z or baby boomers. They are willing to make that shift. And I can totally see like some of the other generations afterwards kind of wanting more of that personal approach, more of the focus on mental health, emotional health as well.
Yes, that's interesting. I think, and even outside of the realm of medicine, we know that different generations, you know, have different kinds of cultural practices and backgrounds and things. Like you said, boomers versus Gen Z versus millennial. So boomers, we might see wanting trusted providers, maybe Gen Z. They want something that's more digital first, something that's more that they can really like, they can go into a portal, they can read their stuff, they can have a health app or a wearable or telehealth, they can get their care and be more in control of their care. So how have you seen that play out within your own patient population when you're treating that range of the baby boomer generation to Gen Z? What do you see happening in terms of their interest, knowledge about all these different types of therapies and their approach to which one do they really want to go? What route they really want to take?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've seen like baby boomers and Gen Y. I've seen them sort of like kind of they just want sort of the healthcare provider to tell them what to do, tell them what to take. And that's sort of their focus. Whereas I think millennials are very interesting because I think that's where healthcare is really changing. I think they have brought more into, I want more control. I don't want you to just tell me what to do. I want to know why. I think they've been the generation of why. And that has sort of sparked a lot of these types of approaches. Now, Gen Z, I think they want to be very involved. They know a lot. They're able to, they've got access to AI. There's knowledge is like, there's so much of it out there now, especially with AI. They're a lot more involved. And I think they also like, they're tangible. They want to see everything. They want to see all the results. They want to see why you're doing what. Where did you come up with this? What is my actual plan? Write it out for me. And not just that, but they're wanting that follow-up. That follow-up piece is what's missed with a lot of the older generations. But they want follow-up and they want to be held accountable for it. They want it to be automatic follow-up, not like relying on them to go and make an appointment to do it. And so I think that's where a lot of this digital health and tracking devices and stuff have become popular. And I do think it's very beneficial as long as you have somebody who's interpreting all this data correctly the way that it needs to be.
Awesome. So kind of closing us up a little bit, we've kind of gone through the whole spectrum, defined each of these types of therapies that people kind of shove all the names into one pile and use them synonymously. So if you had to bet on which of these terms, so holistic, integrative, functional, precision, which one do you think will kind of become the dominant framework over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I personally think that it will be personalized medicine will sort of be more of that dominant, only because personalized medicine to me is more of that concierge approach. And I think that is what the next generations are sort of looking for, a very personalized care for them, concierge, where it really incorporates like lifestyle medicine. Definitely, I think holistic is going to just sort of be assumed. Like, it's just a given that everything is holistic and that everything is integrative. I think that's the point we're going to reach, where holistic, integrative, that is just a given. That is the only type of care now available. And I think personalized medicine really will make it more like pronounced, just because it is more personalized care to you, where you've got like, maybe you've got like a nutritionist, you've got like the physician, you've got a PT. All these people are on the call with you, like one appointment, one call, they're all discussing it together. I also think it will have a bit of a shift away from like so many specialties, like having to see so many different types of specialties. And that's why I think personalized is going to be one of the things that will be probably more pronounced and a lot more like platforms around it.
Awesome. So a final kind of closing. So what's one misconception about this whole space, holistic, integrative, precision, personalized medicine, that you wish pharmacists and patients better understood? And what should pharmacists really take away from the discussion that we had today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the biggest things to understand, it sounds basic, is that Western medicine is amazing and awesome at acute care, emergency care. Something happens, it's amazing. This is where Western medicine has really like got it down. But I think I wish that there was more of an emphasis on chronic care. I feel like when it comes to chronic care with Western medicine, it's been a lot more of algorithm driven. What do the guidelines state? What is the next step? Here's what we're doing. And that's sort of been kind of like the pattern that I think has led all these like patients and other people to sort of turn to alternative techniques, because they want more of a personalized approach. They don't want a Band-Aid. They want somebody to figure out the actual root cause and spend time really connecting the dots. And I think that's what I wish clinicians would understand, is this is more of an approach to connect the dots and give the patient more of like care for their chronic condition, rather than just here's the medication, make sure you exercise and eat well, right? They need somebody to hold their hand, to be able to tell them exactly what to do and follow up with them, accountability. And I think for pharmacists, I will say, I definitely see like a big shift with our profession into like paying more attention to supplements. There's so many supplements out there and so much buzz about you have to do this and you have to do that. And I think it also overlaps with a lot of nutrition. I do think it's really good for pharmacists to be well-versed in supplements, nutrition. I foresee that being sort of part of our role eventually. I see that being kind of a huge thing that we start counseling on. We only get like one or two courses maybe that focus on supplements in pharmacy school. I would say two courses. And so I feel like, especially if you're out in the community, this is something that if you've got access to healthcare, which I think eventually it will come up to where everything's digital and everybody's able to see everything about everyone. And I think eventually, like, being able to be knowledgeable about supplements and these different types of techniques. I also feel like knowing, like when you counsel a patient, I just think there's a lot more to it than how to take the medication and what the side effects are. There's so much more to talk about. My traditional counseling sessions with a patient when it comes to chemo, they're an hour and a half to 2 hours long. There's way too much to cover. And it's not just about the actual chemo. So I think just understanding and knowing that there's a shift in the role of a pharmacist coming in the next decade or so.
Oh, definitely. I agree. I think we're seeing that across the board. Pharmacists are, you know, kind of more patient facing now. They're at the patient's bedside and being seen by other care providers in the multidisciplinary care team, seeing them as more than just this messenger of medicines, right? More so than just this person who is involved in the transaction of taking that medication from the shelf and then handing it over to the nurse so that they can administer to the patient. So I want to thank you so much for jumping on and talking about this today. I think it's a really important topic, really complex, and really as we have more misinformation flooding the internet and people have more access to information now on the internet too, which I think is a big thing, that really understanding the differences between these terms, especially for pharmacists, is important so that you can better counsel your patients on that. So I also just want to highlight for our audience, we do have a specific article that is covering all of this coming out in the August issue for Pharmacy Practice and Focus Oncology publication. So I'm going to highlight that for our audience. Definitely check it out as well as listening to this podcast episode. But again, Sonia, thank you so much for joining me. I'm looking forward to having you again so we can do our next podcast episode so everyone can stay tuned for that too. But otherwise, it was great speaking with you again. Thanks so much.